and welcome to the latest edition of the RVC podcast, Veterinary Science on the Move. My name's Mark Cleesby, and today I'm going to be talking with Professor Claire Wathers and Dr. Robert Abiasekera about their research into dietary puffers and their relationship with fertility in both cattle and humans. Claire and Robert, thank you very much for joining us. Perhaps you could start off just by explaining what puffers are. What does it stand for to start with?
Polyunsaturated fatty acids. And they, as the name implies, are unsaturated, and this makes them at room temperature to be liquid as opposed to saturated fats, which are solid at room temperature. And this tends to be because they have a double bond in their structures, whereas saturated fats tend not to have double bonds. Mm-hmm. And the degree of unsaturation is dependent on the number of double bonds that they possess. Mm-hmm. And there are different types of polyunsaturated fatty acids, both N-3 or N-6, also referred to as omega-3 and omega-6.
And that refers to where the double bond
are is the from the end.
Yes. And so these are obviously the components of what we would think of as fats and oils, basically.
Yes, they are. And the important aspects of polyunsaturated fatty acids for mammals is the fact that they cannot actually synthesize these. They can only get them from the diet.
Right, is that all the polyunsaturated fatty acids, or?
There are some things that are defined as essential fatty acids, and these are those that are at the beginning of the biosynthetic pathway, if you like, and these are linolenic when it comes to the omega-3 puffer pathway, and linoleic acid when it comes to the N6.
Just to comment on where we normally get these from in the diet, the N-6 puffers, in particular linoleic acid, are found at very high concentrations in all vegetable oils, so things like cooking oil, margarine and so on, which we've obviously, as a human population, has increased their consumption of in the last few years. The N-3 pathway, alpha-linolenic acid, is found in green leaf vegetables. So ruminants would traditionally get a large amount of that from grass, but in humans we would get it from eating our green vegetables. Further down that pathway, you find the fish oils. So that's something that's been increasingly recommended for humans to eat more of in recent years.
Yes. So what, I mean, in a sort of standard diet as it exists now, for example, what's the sort of standard mixture of fatty acids that you're likely to be taking in? I guess we'll sort of talk about humans first.
People often look at this in the mix between these two different pathways, and on a primitive diet for both farm animals and humans, it was thought that people would be consuming roughly 1-to-1. Whereas now, with the large increase in the amount of consumption of the linoleic acids and the N6 pathway, it may be 5, 10 or even 15 to 1.
Uh-huh. Okay, and what about for cattle, which you're also sort of particularly interested in?
Well, again, cattle kept under a traditional system out at grass would have a much higher proportion of the N-3 consumption. But if you have herds of intensively managed cows, which are housed inside and fed on total mix rations, then the amount of N6s that are preserved in the forage are relatively low. But these animals would also very typically be fed oils which would contain more linoleic acid. So again, the same thing would have happened for the cows as with the humans, that they're proportionately going to be consuming a lot more N-6 to N-3.
And that's because of the diets have obviously been formulated using a lot of different ingredients, things like sort of fish oils and that sort of thing.
Yes, I mean, very few cattle diets would contain any fish oil. They, in the past, people have used fish meal, which would contain quite a lot of fish oil. But as fish stocks in the world are decreasing, that is a pretty unlikely thing for people to actually be feeding their cattle. Although there has been an interest in possibly feeding more linseed, for example, which is another member of the N3 pathway.
Mm-hmm. So when these mixtures of fatty acids are ingested, then are they all sort of absorbed and go into the plasma in sort of similar proportions, or are they sort of selectively absorbed?
Well, they tend to be absorbed. The amount of absorption is reflected in the plasma, but the amount that is absorbed varies between humans that have a normal simple stomach compared to ruminants who have a complex rumen. And less of the material gets through the rumen and will be absorbed in and be reflected in the plasma.
Uh-huh. So presumably it gets metabolized by the bacteria in the rumen,
Right, yeah. It does. One way of avoiding this or getting over this problem is to protect the polyunsaturated fatty acids in the diet by a process that is called cracking, which ensures that more of the buffer actually gets through the rumen and into blood.
Okay, so that's just a formulation of diet thing.
That's right.
Uh-huh. So what are they actually doing then? I mean, when they get into the blood, are they being metabolized, or are they sort of getting straight onto their functions?
Well, they get absorbed and they move around and they get taken up differentially by the different tissues. The majority of the puffer gets absorbed into the membrane and is part of the cellular membrane, cell wall. Also, they can also be made into small molecules such as prostaglandins, which have a multitude of different effects. They also, obviously, can be used as a source of nutrition.
Sure,
apart from being
sort of representatives of fatty acids, I guess they're obviously going to be oxidized for energy, are they?
No, that's right, yeah. They are.
Okay, so what are they doing in the body?
Well, as we've already mentioned, one of the substances that they are metabolized to are the prostaglandins, and these have a number of different roles in terms of reproduction. They are essential really the whole way through the reproductive process, for example, controlling ovulation, menstruation in women, timing of parturition. So there are a key crucial phases in any woman's life when prostaglandins are going to be essential for normal fertility.
Mm-hmm. So is there a particular effects that have been identified then of puffers on aspects of fertility?
One of the problems at the moment is that you can either do experiments in cells or you can do them on whole animals. And when you add polyunsaturated fatty acids to cells in culture, it's very easy to demonstrate quite dramatic effects, for example, affecting oocyte quality or how the uterus responds at different stages of the cycle. The problem comes when people try to do in vivo experiments. So far, most of the trials that have been done on animals have only used relatively small numbers. And when you're looking at fertility, you really need to have large numbers to conclusively show whether there have or haven't been any effects. And when we come onto humans, there have been really very few controlled trials where you're able to compare the effects accurately. And sometimes the things which have been found to happen in vitro are not always replicated in vivo, partly because of the aspects that we were mentioning just now, that you get various metabolism along the way, so that what you eat in the diet is not going to be necessarily reflected in the particular cell types in different parts of the body.
Yeah, so different cells are obviously taking up the puffers in different proportions and using them in different ways.
Yes, just to give an example in terms of the N-3 puffers, two parts of the body that have particularly high concentrations are the brain, which is important in terms of fetal development, and moving on to male fertility, spermatozoa also have extremely high concentrations of polyunsaturated fatty acids in their membranes. So those two very different cell types both have more than their average share.
Okay, so does puffer intake then affect male fertility as well as female fertility?
Yes, there's evidence that it's really quite likely to, because as I mentioned earlier, spermatozoa have a large proportion of polyunsaturated fatty acids in their membranes, and this makes them very vulnerable to suffer from oxidative stress, which can then damage the sperm and make them infertile. And there's quite a lot of evidence within the human male population that factors related to lifestyle, such as smoking, for example, can cause oxidative stress, and this may be one mechanism that's associated with a decline in male fertility.
Okay, so what sort of effects are you seeing in varying the amounts of puffers on, for example, you mentioned egg development?
Well, what we're finding there is that if you have very high, well, higher concentrations of linoleic acid, then that seems to have adverse effects on the maturation of the oocyte. So potentially it could have a detrimental effect on the likelihood of fertilisation and normal development from occurring.
And that could go for sort of humans or cattle or other species as well?
Yes, at the moment people in our group at the Royal Veterinary College are looking at that in relation to cattle, but there have been studies on sheep and it seems likely that it would equally affect humans.
So is there an effect then of puffer intake on production of hormones from the ovary then?
The ovary is responsible for producing two particular steroid hormones during different phases of the cycle. During the follicular phase, when the follicle is developing and leading up to ovulation, the major steroid hormone that is produced by the ovary is estradiol. Now, puffers both of the N6 and N3 variety have been shown to influence estradiol production. In the second half of the cycle, following ovulation, the structure that is formed, the corpus luteum, is responsible for making progesterone. And once again, polyunsaturated fatty acids of both N6 and N3 have been shown to affect progesterone synthesis. And also, the lifespan of the corpus luteum is influenced by prostaglandins. As I've said earlier, puffers affect prostaglandin synthesis, and through affecting prostaglandin synthesis, puffers can affect the lifespan of the corpus luteum. In addition to affecting the hormone production by the ovary, puffers have also been shown to affect steroid synthesis by the adrenal gland, especially hormones that are released in response to stress, cortisol, and puffers have been shown to affect cortisol release by the adrenal gland.
Mm-hmm. And that has an effect on pregnancy establishment or duration? Or?
Well, in domestic animals such as cows and sheep, it is the activation of the adrenal gland's ability to release cortisol that actually determines the timing of parturition. So it could be that puffers, through affecting adrenal gland steroid hormone synthesis, also influences parturition in that way. It's been shown that puffers of the N6 pathway have been shown to bring forward the timing of parturition, and by the same token, puffers of the N3 pathway have been shown to delay parturition. In terms of the human, so populations that have a high N3 diet, namely fish oil, tend to have longer gestational periods, in other words, delayed parturition, and also slightly larger babies.
Okay, so, what sort of differences are we talking about here? We're talking about days or...
A few days.
A few days, I think.
It's been suggested that it's because the type of prostaglandin that is generated, depending on which particular puffer type that you eat, that because if you eat a diet that is high in N3, you tend to get 3-series prostaglandins, which are less potent.
We think it's of interest here that our studies in sheep have suggested that if they have a very high N6 diet, which is more of the linoleic acid, then this may actually make them more likely to go into preterm labour. And while that isn't of particular significance in most part in farm animals, it is a huge problem in the human population because a very large number of women worldwide do go into preterm labour, and any babies that are born prematurely are then more likely to suffer adverse consequences postnatally. So we do have some preliminary evidence to suggest that a high intake of linoleic acid may predispose women to go into preterm labour.
Okay, so that does sound quite significant then. Is this related to a sort of general change in sort of hormones and controlling the birth, or specifically related to prostaglandins? Or?
Well, it's probably a combination of things, because the prostaglandins are generated in response to other hormones such as oxytocin during parturition, and also in response to luteinizing hormone at the time of ovulation, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So the puffers, apart from effective prostaglandins, can themselves, without being metabolized, be capable of affecting hormone secretion from tissues such as the pituitary gland in the brain.
Okay, so the bottom line is that by altering the amount of puffers in the diet, you're changing the proportions of types of prostaglandin, and therefore altering basically the response of the uterus to other hormones as well, which is obviously going to change the
labour. That's exactly the case.
Yeah.
But one of the difficulties has been with these studies is to actually prove the fact that there is an actual change in the profile of the pattern of prostaglandin generation. Although it's been suggested, and it's suggested to be the theory behind it, suggests that is the case, proving that practically has proved quite difficult.
Is that because it's hard to measure these compounds, or just hard to get them at the right moment from the right tissue?
I think it is because it's hard to measure accurately the three series prostaglandins and to differentiate that measurement from the two series measurements that we make mm-hmm. routinely.
Okay, so a bit more work to establish.
Absolutely.
That then, I guess. So what other mechanisms have you identified then that might mediate this effect on prostaglandins? So, for example, is there a particular regulating enzyme involved in this?
Well, prostaglandin synthesis occurs through cyclooxygenation and so-called COX. And there are different types of cyclooxygenases, and there is an inducible form and a form that is present all the time. Puffers have been shown to affect the expression and activity of the inducible form cyclooxygenase 2. One of the difficulties is the fact that it's difficult to predict with any degree of certainty what effect a particular puffer will have on the cyclooxygenase in a given tissue.
Okay, so that makes things quite complicated then in determining what to do with the diets, I guess. So, I mean, in other words, if one was capable of changing the activity of the COX-2 enzyme specifically, then that would obviously have a positive effect upon the duration of pregnancy.
Yes, it could have a positive effect on duration of pregnancy because the timing at which COX-2 enzyme activity increases has been suggested to be dictating the timing of onset of parturition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can affect the time at which this particular upregulation event occurs through manipulating the diet and having different puffers available, then you could affect the timing of labour.
Okay, so I mean, if we talk about cattle then, I mean, what can you say at the moment in terms of maximizing fertility in terms of getting the cattle pregnant, and also during pregnancy in terms of the ideal length of pregnancy? What can you say in terms of feeding recommendations at the moment?
As I mentioned earlier, there has been some interest in the possibility of giving cattle more of the N-3 puffers, for example, in the form of fish oil. However, I think at the moment the evidence to support this is not really particularly strong, and bearing in mind that these compounds are quite expensive, it seems unlikely that in reality that farmers will be in a position to feed adequately large amounts of these fish oils to cattle to really affect their reproductive processes. I think what I would like to emphasise is the evidence that we are getting seems to consistently suggest that having too much proportionately of linoleic acid may be harmful to fertility, and that is something that there is quite a lot of in cattle diets, so perhaps people should look at that aspect. And while feeding some of these oils are useful in terms of increasing the energy intake, they may be having more subtle adverse effects on fertility, which could potentially contribute to the poor fertility that's currently found in the dairy cow population.
Okay, so what's the corollary then for humans, from a reproductive point of view or from a general health point of view? Should we be recommending supplementation with various types of puffers to aid development and pregnancy in humans?
Well, based on the literature and our own studies in animals, it's probably true to say that having a diet that is high in M6 puffers is probably going to adversely affect the process of pregnancy and parturition.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, bring forward the time in the parturition. Conversely, having a high M3 diet will probably benefit individuals with regard to the length of gestation, because it's unlikely to involve a predisposition to preterm labour. If at all, it'll protect against that process.
Mm-hmm. So that suggests that, as is sort of generally advocated anyway, more eating of fish oils, basically, and nice oily fish.
Yes, during pregnancy is more than likely to help the pregnancy itself as well as the development of the fetus, because M3 puffers are essential fatty acids, as we said, in terms of brain development and visual acuity.
Okay, so that's got to be a good thing to think about in any case. Okay, well, thank you very much both for that. I think there's obviously a lot more work to be done to establish really what can be done to improve fertility in dairy cattle, but I think there's some very clear recommendations now for improving the lot of humans anyway. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
You can read more about Claire and Robert's work on puffers and reproduction in a review they published in August 2007 in Biology of Reproduction. And thank you very much for listening to the latest edition of this, the RVC podcast. I hope very much that you'll be able to join us again next time. In the meantime, if you have any comments or suggestions with regard to the podcast, please email us at podcast@rvc.ac.uk. Thanks a lot.